Food Fix, a podcast where we talk with innovators and policymakers on how to better feed the world. I'm your host, Max Johnston. When looking at the fight between crops and bacteria, it might be helpful to think of it as a battle. Attack and defense. Bacteria tries to penetrate a plant's armor and take it over, while plants build up their armor and parry with acids and chemicals. Researchers at Michigan State University have looked into this battle and what role heat plays in the fight. Bethany Yacht is the lead author of a study out of MSU's Plant Research Laboratory on how heat factors into this bio-warfare. We talked about the battle between plants and pathogens and much more.
So to start off, broadly speaking, weather is a constant factor in crops and food production. And then I noticed in your article you pointed out that in some years it can be especially bad for disease and insect outbreaks. Can you tell me a little bit why that is the case? What sort of larger scale impact does weather have on those?
When we study plant-pathogen interactions, which is what our lab does, we tend to get really molecular and look at how this organism is interacting with the other organism. But actually, we can only understand that interaction in the context of its environment. And so when it comes to weather and disease, it's really about finding the sweet spot for both. So if you think about it like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, Goldilocks comes in, she finds three bowls of porridge, and she tries each one, and one's too hot, and one's too cold, and one's just right. So she eats that one all up. So you can imagine if the porridge bowls are the plants and Goldilocks is the pathogen, she only ate one all gone because it was just right for her. It's kind of similar with plants and pathogens. The plant has an optimal temperature that it likes. Corn likes to grow in warmer temperatures. Wheat likes to grow in cooler temperatures. And pathogens are the same, and insects are the same. They have temperatures that they can, for an insect, it can hatch and it can grow under the certain temperature range. For a bacteria or a fungus, it's the same way. But in other temperatures, they're not going to be able to grow or survive.
So it's not just like high temperatures per se. It's just a specific temperature range that works for each.
It's about finding that perfect match where the host is going to be compromised in some way, the pathogen is going to be at an advantage, and then you get disease.
And one aspect of the study that I found interesting was the disease triangle. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that concept and what role does that play in food production and both crop disease?
So the disease triangle is basically what we call the interactions between those three elements, the host, the pathogen, and the environment. So we kind of think about it as a battle between the plant and the pathogen, who's going to outgun the other one. So each of these organisms are coming up with weapons to fight the other one off and try to evade or overcome the other one's defenses or attacks. And whichever one has the superior firepower is the one that's going to dominate. So if the plant has the better weapons, it's going to be resistant. If the pathogen has the better weapons, there's going to be disease.
And then heat factors into those defense mechanisms that each have, or I guess attack mechanisms.
Temperature will, absolutely. Right. So say the temperature is not right for the pathogen to grow, it doesn't matter what weapons it has, it can't use them. Or say that the temperature is not really good for the plant, it's already diverting some of its resources to deal with not quite right growing conditions, so it's left compromised or unguarded in a way.
So there's a really popular example of this sort of perfect storm, which was the Irish potato famine, which mm-hmm. you mentioned in the study. Can you tell me a little bit about how that relates to the disease triangle and sort of what we're talking about when we talk about this?
So if you would think about going back to Goldilocks and the Three Bears, say all the porridge bowls were the same just right temperature, Goldilocks would have probably eaten all three bowls and there would be no food left. And this is kind of what happened with the Irish potato famine, is that all of the potatoes were the same. They had all the same kind of defenses. So it's not that they were completely defenseless, but the pathogen that came into the area was one they hadn't seen before. So they didn't have the right defenses. So let's say in another scenario, Goldilocks came in and ate the one bowl of porridge. And so the bears learned and they said, okay, we're not going to make that temperature porridge anymore. And they started making it all hot. Well, let's say the next year you had a Goldilocks that liked hot porridge. Well, now all your porridge is the same temperature, so your crop's gone. So that's kind of what happened in this case. All the potatoes were the same. It was a pathogen that potatoes hadn't seen before, so they didn't have the right kind of weapons to defend themselves. So all of the potato crops were just destroyed.
So getting right into the method of this study that you worked on. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but you took what is called thalecress, which is a small weed that you see in like the cracks of cement, and you took a bacterial pathogen, and I'm reading here PST-DC-3000.
Yeah.
So take me through that. So you have thalecress, this weed, and this pathogen. Just take me through what you did and sort of your initial findings.
Sure. So we started off with an observation. We know that this plant at elevated temperature of 30 degrees, which is around 86 degrees Fahrenheit, we knew that it was compromised somehow. So if you infect this plant with this bacteria at this temperature, there's more disease. But we wanted to know why. And so we were trying to dissect this situation. And so to do that, again, it helps to know these organisms really well and know what are the common tools they use to fight each other.
Right.
So going back to those biological warfare weapons. So in the case of Arabidopsis,
thalecress, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
I'm used to calling it
Arabidopsis. Absolutely.
Arabidopsis is also thalecress.
Yes.
Now we know.
Yes.
So you can refer to it however you like.
Thank you for correcting me. Mm-hmm. So, and actually in many plants, they have hormones that they use, and the plants use their hormones to regulate their responses to different conditions. So salicylic acid is a hormone that a plant makes, and actually people use that as a medicine. So we've modified
it's
it a bit.
It's an aspirin, correct?
It's called aspirin. Yep. Plants make it on their own. So plants make this as a way of defending themselves against different kinds, a whole bunch of different kinds of pathogens. And in the case of this interaction, it's very important for thalecress to defend itself against DC-3000. So that's kind of the weapon that the plant has in this scenario. On the pathogen side, there's different kinds of weapons it has, but one that we found was really important is a syringe apparatus that it uses to inject proteins into the plant, and then those proteins go in to shut down the plant's defense system.
I see.
It can grow.
So it sort of tries
sweat.
To get ahead of the
exactly. So this is aspect. That arms race that I was right. talking about. So it has to have the right proteins that do the right things without the plant knowing or being
right.
able to stop it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of this back and forth. So we were looking at those two things at this elevated temperature compared to what we would consider a normal temperature to see, okay, what's really going on.
So go ahead and take me through what you saw and what's sort of the role that heat played in both that defense mechanism and that attack mechanism.
So we found that at the higher temperature, the plant could not make its aspirin anymore. And that's really...
And that's regardless of the pathogen.
Absolutely.
That's just at a higher
yes.
temperature.
Okay. So we looked both if the pathogen was there. So once the plant sees the pathogen is there, it makes a bunch of this aspirin. Yeah. So we tried it without the pathogen there to see, is this a direct effect of temperature on the plant, or is it something that the pathogen is able to do at this temperature? And it was independent of the pathogen. So at higher temperatures, the ability to make this important defense compound is compromised. And so on the side of the pathogen, you know, our guess was, okay, there's more disease, but based on what other people have studied, the ability for the pathogen to get its weapons in is down. So it must be that the host is compromised and the pathogen's able to take advantage of that. But what we found actually is that more of those proteins were getting in. And so I was able to measure how many were getting in under both temperatures, and more were getting in at the higher temperature. So that way it wasn't, oh, there's more bacteria, so of course more proteins are getting in. It was actually more of these proteins were getting in first, and then we think that allowed more bacteria to grow.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So the heat was allowing for more proteins to enter into the plant, and then once more proteins are there, it's just easier for it to spread throughout the rest of the plant.
Yeah, but it seems like when we studied further that it was really that loss of SA in the plant or the aspirin in the plant that was causing the more disease or the more bacteria to grow. So even though the pathogen was getting more of the proteins in, that didn't seem to be as important as the plant's completely compromised.
I see. Okay.
So if we took a plant where we had removed its ability to make aspirin and we tested that plant, the same amount of bacteria grew in that plant at both temperatures, which means the loss of aspirin is really what's determining the level of disease.
I see. So the larger effect of the heat was on those defense mechanisms specifically. Am I reading into that correctly?
Pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's affecting both.
Right.
And so the reason it's important to know that it's affecting both is because, say, we were able to fix the plant's ability to make aspirin, the plant pathogen's still stronger.
Right.
So we have two problems here that we need to make sure we address both of them.
I see. So on that note, sort of the implications of this, I know this study wasn't necessarily on those larger scale implications, but what can you sort of pull from this looking forward in further research in the way heat affects both those defense mechanisms and the way it affects those pathogens?
So the final thing that we did was we said, okay, if the most important thing is loss of the plant's ability to make aspirin, what if we give it some? So we have a chemical that actually is available for farmers to use. They can treat their crops with it and it can protect them against certain kinds of diseases. What if we treat our plants with that first and then let it see the pathogen? And it was able to protect them no matter what temperature, whether it was the lower temperature or the higher temperature. So we were really excited by that because it means that even though the pathogen was stronger, if we gave the plant the right tools or the right weapons, it was able to be protected at both temperatures. So that's really helpful for us moving forward, is that we can start saying, okay, then how can we help arm plants the right way so that way they're actually resilient? They're actually able to defend themselves if the temperature is low or if it's high. You know, from year to year, even if the trend is going up, from year to year, we know there can be some years that are colder and some years that are warmer. So we need to make sure that plants can handle both.
What do you think about Yat and her team's research? How can we help crops defend themselves from disease? Email us with any questions or comments at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com or leave them in the comments below this post. The Food Fix is supported by the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation at Michigan State University, a development lab funded by USAID. I've been your host, Max Johnston. Thanks for listening.